Welcome to DL Gaming. I'm Bobby.
I'm Emilio, and something funny. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Okay. Oh, man. All right. I'm not going
to
be...
I didn't get time to prepare, man.
Yeah. No, it does kind of just come right at you when we do this remotely. This is going to be tough for me, man. I am so sunburnt and, like... I hate being sunburnt more than anything, like anything in the world. This is the least pleasant thing I can imagine. And I
knew. Why didn't you take precautions?
I used sunscreen. Didn't seem to work very well. I was out there way too long. So, you know, my friend Matt, we went out when he was in town to that arcade or that bar with arcade machines in it. He was down here and he was going to the beach. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go too. So I went down there and we were out there for maybe 3 hours. So otherwise, like, I'd never really go to the beach, especially like literally the hottest day of the year yesterday.
Yeah.
Like literally not even an exaggeration here. It was so hot and there were so many, it's Labor Day weekend. So many people out there.
Dude, now that I'm looking at you, I'm seeing the burnt part. Your whole forehead is going to peel off.
Yeah.
I can see the difference.
It's
gonna
peel off like a mask. It's gross, man. It's,
yeah.
I've been covering myself with aloe for like every hour on the hour, just doing what I can, but it's going to be a pain in the ass sleeping tonight. So that's where I'm at this episode.
And then Don't worry, dude. I'll carry the show. I'll put you on my shoulders and I'm going to carry the show. What do you think about that?
All right. Sounds good. we've got our, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, movies on the DL episode. It's going to be coming out, well, it should be out before this episode comes out, actually. You can get access to that if you are a patron. And thank you to everyone who is a patron. There's quite a few of you. That is the best way to support us. I mean, you can always subscribe on Twitch or, you know, donate there too. But really, I think the patron is the best thing. Plus, you get something out of it too.
Yeah. Conversely, you can catch the live show, but we delete that video. So it's a one shot. Basically you can show up and listen to a video where there's no listener interaction. You're just there to see our opinion on a movie.
Yep. You got one shot, just like Eminem, who I'm told I look like today. Oh my God, dude. I was going to mention.
Now that you're sunburnt?
What's that?
Now that you're sunburnt, you look like him.
No, it's because I'm wearing a white shirt, and this is a very baggy white shirt. My head's kind of shaved right now. But I got an email from somebody, not at my work, someone from like this other company who we do business with. And you know how people always put like little taglines in their email, like in their signature, like they'll have their name, their phone number, like their position, and then like maybe an inspirational quote. A lot of inspirational quotes, by the way, because I work in education. But those always crack me up because I don't know. They, it's like a bumper sticker on a car. I would never have one. But someone from another company had emailed me and their quote was like two lines from that Eminem song. It's however it begins, you know, if you had one shot to get everything ever, dreamed of or something like that, would you take it? Like, you know, something like that. I was like, wow. And now I want to watch 8 Mile again because it's been a while.
You should make one, but like a counterculture one, you know what I mean? Something poking fun at the whole thing. Like if you made it this far in the email.
No, dude.
Fuck you.
No, because there's a lot of other people in IT that do that and think they're like super hilarious. Like put something like there are only 10 types of people in the world. Those who understand binary and those who don't. Yeah, you know, shit like that. No. Yeah. No, man.
What's a fucking link the podcast. I don't care. All right.
All right. Well, let's talk about some video games, man. I want to talk about a game that I played a lot today called Into the Breach. It was free on the Epic Store about a week ago, I guess. And I've been meaning to play this game forever because it's from the guys who made FTL, which is, you know, one of the best PC games ever made, possibly. And It was a while since they came out with another one. FTL was like, God, when did FTL come out? I'm going to look it up because this one came out in 2018.
You know what's funny, too, is they seem like simple games, right? Because mm-hmm. you look at them and the graphics are not all that intense. But they put a lot of work into the mechanics. Yeah. And the, not story, but maybe like, yeah, mostly mechanics.
Yeah, yeah. And now I know you, FTL came out in 2012, by the way. Yeah, it's kind of deceptive when a game looks like that, you know, very 8-bit, very simplistic, but then it turns out to be very complex. I remember you played this a while ago and you talked about it. And the only thing I remember from you when you talked about it was you said it was really hard and you didn't like it as much as FTL. Does that sound right?
Yeah, but I don't think I gave it its just due. Like, I don't think I played it more than 2 hours, I want to say. And from what I've read is, like, once you get it, it sinks mm-hmm. in and it becomes easier and easier as you go. Yeah. But this is a game, like, I beat it the first time, right? But all the beating it does is unlocks, not, I shouldn't say all it does, because it's something good. But you beat the game, you unlock a new army or whatever. And you have to beat the game with a new army.
Well, you earn a currency, and you can use that currency to then unlock other types of mechs or tanks or whatever. And they come in sets. You can buy the set, and the set kind of goes with each other. But you can also build your own custom set, too. So did you?
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, yeah. You can build your own custom squad and really, really play around there. Those are the mechs, but then you can also have the pilots who have their own things. But did you beat it on normal or did you beat it on easy?
I couldn't tell you, man. It's okay. Been too long.
Because I played on normal.
Feeling dumb. Like, mm-hmm. no, it wasn't dumb. It was, like, okay, so I'll full disclosure here. I'm too dumb to play Crusader Kings. Like, I just, it doesn't work in my head. I can't get it to work in my head. This game I understood, but every time I played it, I would like lose a mech, or like it wouldn't go. I would win, but it wasn't as satisfying a win. You know what I mean? So I would restart, and then it would just go over and over and over because I would lose. I would lose one of my crew, and so then I start over, and then it got repetitive, and then that's why I stopped playing. But that's on me. That's not on the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like FTL in the way that it's not forgiving. It does give you like an undo move button, but it's only a move. If you fire, then you're locked into that. You can also, once per battle, reset your turn, but that's it. Those are the only things that you can do. Otherwise, like, it's very easy to just wipe your entire playthrough in one battle because you made some dumb mistakes. And the game does make you feel dumb a little bit because it looks like it's a turn-based strategy game or a turn-based tactics game, but it's more of a puzzle game. It's a lot like chess. Yeah. Yeah, it really is like chess. And I really enjoyed that, by the way. I thought that was very cool.
But it's like chess where the rules change every new set of characters you get.
Yeah, and there's also environmental variables in there. Like, there's a lot going on in it. And you know, you have a certain amount of action points, move and weaponry, and you can do certain things, and you got to figure out what to do first and what to do in general. And if you mess one thing up, or if you realize like halfway through like your turn that, oh no, I should have done it this way, then it's too late. And I had many times like that. And you can use that one reset you have per battle, but a lot of times, if you don't, or if you've already used that up, then you're stuck, and some mistakes you make can like completely wipe you. So yeah, it's a difficult game in that sense. I tried playing it on normal, and I didn't make it very far, and so I knocked it down to easy because I remembered FTL like forever trying to beat that game on normal, and then easy realizing So I remembered that, and I thought, okay, I'll just go to the easy mode. And then it was too easy. I just rolled right through it, but I was able to unlock a few other sets of mechs. I got a few achievements. I really started to understand the game, and I saw all the different maps and areas that you can play in. And I don't think I like Into the Breach as much as FTL. I don't think it's as good.
I agree.
But it is a good game. It's a really good game. It feels smaller than FTL. Like it when I beat it on easy, I was like, yeah, okay. But I didn't have much of a desire to go back and play it on normal.
I think that's because of the randomness that FTL provides. Like, you never know which way it's going to go. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that can happen and so many branching paths that it seems infinite. It really isn't. I mean, if you play a lot of that, I'm sure you've seen everything. Also, the random encounters, I think they're random within themselves. So, mm-hmm. like in FTL, you might find an egg. If you open the egg, like a monster might pop out and kill one of your crew. But also, that might happen on another a mission, and you open the egg and you get something like a reward. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So random, even within its randomness. And that's what I, randomness is one of the strongest traits a game can have for me. And this is like a set game. It has its set pieces and there's not a lot of randomness to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, after you, like, I don't know what I would get out of a second run. It would be more challenging, but I don't know. It's not as adventurous. And I think that ties into what you're saying about the randomness. But
yeah, I mean
it's still a good game.
No, it's a good game. But you changing your set of a mechs definitely changes the game quite a bit. It's almost like a new board or a new type of chess every time. Mm-hmm. So it does add to the replayability. This is not a game to play once, and they didn't intend for you to play it, beat it, and leave it alone. They wanted you to play it with every team that they have, every set. But, yeah, I fell off pretty quick on this one.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 82 out of 100. But, I mean, hey, you can't complain. The game's free on Epic. I think it still is right now, too, so make sure you grab that. I mean, I played it straight for like 5 or 6 hours today. So, I mean, it's not – if I can play a game for that long, there's something there.
I played Remnant from the Ashes, Subject 23, and not only did I play it, I beat it. So – I had played a couple of hours, I believe, last time I talked about it. And then me and JP Diddy, they said, you know, let's get through this. And like I've said before, on the main quest, I think on the main playthrough and the main game mode campaign, if you will, we've just kind of figured it out. We got most of the bosses within one or two attempts. One might have taken us 5, but we beat the game or the DLC. But no complaints. It's more of the same, but that is not a bad thing. There's a new level, the snowy level, and then there's a new factory level, which is like the base level, but they expanded on it, which is great because that just adds to the roguelike. More things that can happen on the roguelike. There's a new mechanic with frost and cold and all of that, which was missing out of the first game. And it's just good shit. I mean, the character design stays impressive and probably is the biggest selling point. They just do a really good job of making characters. Story-wise, you know, I don't care. I'm having fun with a friend and
I'm wondering what's in the works for them in the future here. If they're gonna,
they're saying this is the end of Remnant from the Ashes.
Okay.
But what they said was this is the last DLC for From the Ashes. I think this is what they said. So, Remnant 2 is probably coming down the pike, and all the money that they made from here, I think they can really up the graphics. Which is really my only complaint about this whole game. It just wasn't, it didn't have the resolution and it wasn't pushing the pixels the way that a game like this should. That was the only complaint. Other than that, you know, one of my favorite games in recent memory. you know, a lot of that has to do with me playing with John and playing with Chad during all of that. But it's good that a game just kind of works. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that came out in 2019, so not a contender for Game of the Year 2020.
Yeah, I don't think it would be, you know.
You don't, but, even if it wasn't 2020, you don't think it'd be your Game of the Year?
It wouldn't be Game of the Year. It would be maybe something I would think about. But also, it's been a slow year, man.
Yeah.
I feel like.
That's what I'm saying. Either,
well, we're also playing less games.
Well, we do this every year. We get to the end of the year, and we're just like, you know, we keep assuming there's going to be like this huge blockbuster game. Of course, Cyberpunk is still on track for a November release, so I guess there's time.
Yeah, for sure. All right, what's next?
What about Outriders? We were going to talk about that last week, but we didn't have time.
Right? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Outriders is it's basically Destiny, but made by a different company. And, you know, it's a lot newer. It's a couple of years newer. And every once in a while, something happens that, or you see a trailer, or you see some gameplay that really, really speaks to you. And for some reason, man, this game, I have a hard-on for it. Like, I don't know what it is. So some of the aesthetic, some of character design, some of the special moves that I'm seeing, the building. I'm good. Thank you. Oh, sorry. I have to give my girl an alcoholic beverage.
Okay.
All right, there we go. See how easy that is? It's just a handoff.
Fantastic. So I don't know. You said this game looks like Destiny. It doesn't really look like Destiny to me.
Exactly what it is, though. It's a looter shooter with three people co-op. It's third person, though. I think Destiny is first person.
Yeah, but right? There's a million looter shooters out there. It kind of looked more like The Division to me, or I don't know, Anthem or something. But I don't know. Who knows? Like, what's the point in like saying it looks like this or that? What is cool is that it's from People Can Fly. Now, that developer, I believe, is the one that made Bulletstorm. Yeah, Bulletstorm and the Painkiller games.
Yep.
Those were fun. Back in the day, Bulletstorm I liked, sure. Man. I thought Bulletstorm was great. You know, it was a short, fun, funny game.
Yeah, it's good. It was good, and I knew that you would pick up on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, man. Look at some gameplay. There's like 30 minutes of gameplay on there.
Yeah, I watched the YouTube video.
I was fucking hype. I'm hypey for this. I don't know what it is. Hopefully it does not fall flat, because I am actually excited for a video game, and it hasn't it's been a while since that's happened.
Yeah, this is like Anthem. It's got You can pre-purchase it for $60 right now, and that's 18% off.
Yeah, because
like some pre-order DLC, Outriders Hellrangers content pack. Yeah, no, thank you.
I was totally gonna mansplain some bullshit, because I guess the whole new next gen consoles, I believe they're trying to agree on a $70 price point for new games, $69.99 for new games. And I know that because CD Projekt Red has said they're not going to charge that. They're going to charge the standard $59.99.
Well, it is kind of crazy that, I mean, $50-$60 has been the standard since like the 90s, right? I remember paying $50 for Super Mario Bros. 3.
Yeah, I would not be against a $70 price tag.
Yeah.
For, you know, like AAA, I would say, you know.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Dude. Like, you say $70 price tag for a AAA game, people lose their minds. But you say free-to-play game with microtransactions and, you know, in-app purchases, and people are like, okay. And then they drop like thousands of dollars or hundreds of dollars maybe. You know, it's only in HOTS. But I don't know. Like, I'm not adverse to a $70 price tag. I mean, I did pay like over $100 for my copy of Battlefield 4, I think. I got whatever like the most deluxe edition you could get, was it four or was it three? I can't remember. One of those ones.
What did you get out of it?
The way they did their drops, like you open these chests and you got them every so often, and like I got special kinds of ones, like a lot of cosmetic stuff. You also got like priority queuing when joining servers. I don't know, man. Like I'm fine with that, though. At least I was then. I wouldn't do something like that now, but as much Battlefield as I played, like that was okay with me.
You're like a different person now, Bobby. I think Hot screwed you so hard that you've changed your persona.
Maybe. I don't know, man. But it's
$100 into a game, $0 to any game.
Well, I mean, I'm not really interested in games at this price point either. You know, a lot of these AAA games I'm not really into right now.
Dude, yeah,
at a certain point, you got to be like, I don't understand.
Grand Theft Auto, $70 all day. You know, like Witcher, another Witcher game all day.
Yeah.
Anything from CD Projekt Red, anything from Larian Studios, $70. I'm there all day. Id Software, yes. Sign me up. But you got to be one of those heavy hitters for that. Super heavy hitters. I don't think just because you're on a next-gen console, you get to charge $70. Right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't care about consoles.
Well,
unless it's the Nintendo Switch, which when they come down in price, then we'll talk. But
and speaking of the Nintendo Switch, have you seen Mario Kart Live?
No, what's that?
Dude, click this link, play this video.
I did, and it was really loud. All right, let me bring it up
here. They are fucking genius.
Oh, God, it started again. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They're geniuses over at Nintendo, man. So, is that the wrong? That might be the wrong.
Mario Kart Live Analysis?
Oh, yeah. Just skip ahead. Oh, there we go. Okay, so this is what it is.
Oh, man, that looks cool.
Oh, dude, it's a Switch game that comes with remote control cars, and you put them with goalposts. So you get the goalposts, you put them throughout your house or backyard or whatever, and then you have Mario drive around with a paint car. The paint car makes the track between the goalposts. I believe there's four, maybe five goalposts. So you can make whatever track you want. And you drive around, and you make the track, and then later on you play the track in this kind of like, what's AR? Augmented reality?
Yeah. I don't know. Why does this video keep pausing or freezing? Like, is he pausing to show something here?
Well, he's talking about, it's like, little tiny.
It looks like the video is stuttering. But I see what's going on here. So this is, like, literally his living room right here that he's playing a racetrack on in Mario Kart. Correct.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. And at first I was like, why do they have little cars? Like, that the sun seems... Because you can't see the little cars driving around.
Dude, I can't do this video.
All right.
I'll look up another one.
Yeah, you could do the main trailer. But then I realized that you have to, I actually just realized while I was thinking about it right now, there's cameras on it, and that's what's capturing the video of your house. Mm-hmm. So you need to have these little cameras riding around. Capturing your house so that it's inside the game. It's just fucking incredible, dude. From top to bottom, it is such a great idea. So it cannot be cheap.
It's a camera on the cart. Yeah, dude.
It's gotta be.
God, dude. People are there's gonna be videos of like people chasing their cat around, and you know, people like playing this in like famous places. You know, like this is gonna be great.
This is gonna be great.
That is such a cool toy. How much is this?
This was just the announcement trailer. I have not seen any more information. Actually, besides the trailer, I haven't found any information at all. So that's all there is at this current point. But yeah.
Are you going to buy this?
I don't, because we kind of have a house
You got a big enough house for it. You got a good track there.
You perfectly have a house for this. Like, I already have a circuit around my house that I chase the dog. The dog chases the cat, and we like. There's already a perfect circle. Mm-hmm. So this is a great, 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 great idea for us. But I can't imagine that this is going to be cheap. This is going to be. Nintendo has a Nintendo Premium. On top of that, remote control cars are not cheap. Their games aren't cheap. Yeah, it's going to be $200.
Well, I mean, you already have the Switch. You just got to buy the little cars, right?
And the game.
Oh, and the game. Yeah.
Yeah. Two cars and a game, $200, I'm guessing.
200? Jeez. I don't know, man. That seems like a lot. But that is really cool, though. That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, it's a fantastic idea. A lot of people are right.
Oh, God. Do they have a release date?
Bobby, I watch trailers and I come on a podcast. I don't do much.
Okay. Let's see. Mario Kart Live release date. Man, Mario Kart, you know, I've been talking about. I'm still playing Legend of Zelda, by the way. I was playing that on stream before we got started here. But Mario Kart Super Nintendo, such a great game, man. I mean, I'm sure the new ones are better, but that one still holds up. So October 16th. We didn't talk
about why we were remote today, dude. It was 105 degrees, which means in our podcast room, it's 130 degrees.
Yeah. We would have died.
We would have died.
We would have died live on Twitch. God. Okay, so October 16th is the release date.
That's pretty good. Soon.
Yeah, right before Christmas. That would be cool. Do you think the price will ever come down on a Switch? Like, is it just going to be like this forever now?
Oh, the exaggerated prices?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, who knows? I would, if I was Nintendo, I would up production to try to, and that would screw all of those people that are trying to poach the games.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, upping production costs a lot of money, so.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
All right.
Especially with COVID times. Makes everything harder.
Yep. Okay. What else you want to talk about? What have you been watching?
Are you? Let's see. Love on the Spectrum. Let's jump over to Netflix. It's in a... Oh, man, I can't stop hiccuping. It's an incredible show. It's about people on the spectrum trying to find love. Spoilers, none of them do, for the most part. It is so think about how hard it is to find somebody for long-term love in real life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like your person or whatever. It's incredibly hard. And then add on top of that, you don't understand social cues and all of that shit. So these are all super high functioning autistic people or people on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're, you know, almost normal, except for just like a few things. And, you know, they try to work through that stuff. And the outcome is hilarity. I can only say it. Like, I'm not laughing at them because what they're saying is true. They have no filter, right? They just speak their mind, especially the first guy, Michael. He could have his own anything. He could have his own show. He's so fucking funny, dude. But not funny. They're not trying to be funny. I was trying to come to terms with this with Sam. Like, I don't want to think that I'm laughing at these people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really don't think it is. It's not like I'm laughing at people with Down syndrome. But I am laughing at the things that they say because they are childlike. And only childlike in their innocence. And in that way, because they're like innocent adults and they say things that are just incredibly funny. I'm laughing and it's super sad as well. There's this one guy that's just a fucking sweetheart, dude. Just, they're all sweethearts. I mean, I don't know if that's because of the casting, probably mostly because of the casting, but they all come off as complete sweethearts. And you feel for these people because they cannot find somebody to love them. And that's all they want. And it's really, really sad. Mm-hmm. But also, they seem to be great people, at least the ones on the show. You know what I mean?
Have you finished the season?
Yeah, I finished the whole thing. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's incredible.
I've seen some of these episodes, but this was a show in the UK before. It was called Undateables, and I've been watching that on and off for, God, 6 years, 7 years, whenever it started back then.
That's a rude way to say that.
How is that rude?
Undateables?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like a play on, you have to see the logo because it says Undateables and then a little Cupid comes up and shoots off the un part and it falls off and it just says Dateables. So it's like they're acknowledging that like these are people who would have difficulty dating, but it is a
date. So have you seen this one?
What's that?
Have you seen this season?
I've seen a couple. I've seen a couple episodes of Love on the Spectrum, but Undateables is not just autistic people. It's all sorts of people. There are people who have Down syndrome. There are people who have Williamson's syndrome. Like, there's autistic people. They had one or two people with like Tourette's. It's all sorts of people. If you do watch, I honestly like Undateables better than Love on the Spectrum. And if you do watch it, man, look out for my boy Richard. That guy is the show right there.
Where can I watch this?
I don't know. I mean, it's on it's on UK television. It's hard to find legally. Yeah. So
you didn't think Michael was the most entertaining person on TV? The first guy, the guy that they lead with.
No, I thought he was pretty good. Dude, I'm telling you, like I've seen like these guys are British too, right? I think this might be a British show as well. They have accents.
But it's probably a British show, but they filmed in Australia. Because everybody's Australian.
Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like there's been all sorts of colorful characters that I've seen on the other shows as well.
But anyway, my review is I laughed, I cried, I thought it was incredible.
I'm surprised none of them get together, though, because on Undateables, a lot of them do. They end up dating for years and years, and they check back with them and see how they're doing, and maybe they break up after a couple of years, or some of them are still together.
Well, those people have regular functioning minds for the most part, you know? These people are dealing with literally social... They don't understand social cues, and dating is a social thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's autistic people on Undateables too.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean...
So I think you should write in and let them know how you found love.
Yikes. All right.
Start talking about Bowling for Columbine. I got to pee.
Okay. Just talk and you're going to leave. Okay.
Sorry.
Oh, God. Yeah, so I've been watching a ton of documentaries lately still. Taking that class on documentary filmmaking, and it's actually a really good class. I feel like I'm learning quite a bit from it. But there you go. I'm getting notes here. But yeah, so I've been watching a lot of documentaries, and one documentary that I have never seen was Bowling for Columbine. And I put off watching this forever. And I finally watched it, and yeah, it was pretty good. Now, like from like an ethical standpoint, I do think like a lot of documentaries, there's a little, it was a little one-sided in parts. And, Michael Moore just really rubs me the wrong way, man. He's gotten himself into a little bit of trouble these days because, I don't know, maybe he said some stuff on Twitter, but I know there was one particular incident where he hired like this, like a theater for something, and then he never paid them, and then they constantly hit him up for money, and then he sued them or something, and it was this whole kerfuffle. And even Leonard Maltin, who is like the nicest guy in the world, went on, I don't know, Instagram or Twitter and recorded a video like shaming Michael Moore for doing that to that theater because he had worked with that theater before, and they were really, you know, stand up people over there. So I know lately, like, yeah, Michael Moore has like been this turd that nobody likes, but even watching Bowling for Columbine, he's just such a sad sack, man. He's so pathetic. And like, that's like, he tries to be pathetic. He does this like gotcha journalism where he'll like go up to somebody, what was the guy's name? I think it was Dick Cavett or something. He owns a bunch of these restaurants or something. And he like ambushes people with these interviews, which, you know, you do want to see these big, powerful people like answer for the shitty things that they do. But you kind of have to expect, like, if you just ambush somebody and stick a mic and a camera in their face, they're not going to be very responsive. And then when they walk away, he's just like, but the people, and he's just like, he literally is like that. He like shrugs his shoulders and he looks super pathetic. And I'm just like, God, dude, this is like, it's a little off-putting. So I do not like Michael Moore. I think his message in Bowling for Columbine, you know, a lot of people think it's about gun control. Like it's an anti-gun thing. And he makes it clear up front that that's not the case. But what he's looking for is why do Americans kill each other with guns, you know, more than any other country in the world? And, you know, is it because we have a lot of guns? And he goes to Canada and says, well, they have a lot of guns too. And they're not killing each other.
At the time, I think they had more per capita than we did mm-hmm. at the time.
Yeah, at the time. You know, this documentary is 20 years old. Who knows how things are now?
Watching it retrospectively, how accurate was he on a lot of the stuff that he said?
Well, I mean, he gets a lot of stuff right. I mean, he's done his research when he's talking about, like, you know, the wars that we were involved in back then. But it's just when he does something like goes to Canada and sees if people leave their door unlocked, because a lot of people were saying, like, I never lock my door. So he goes around and, like, just opens up people's doors. And he goes to, like, I think 3 different places, and sure enough, the doors are unlocked. Who knows how many places he really went to? Maybe he just cut those and just put in the doors that weren't locked. That's the type of stuff where I'm just kind of like, I don't know, that could be one-sided. And also, you know, the documentary is very authorial. Like, it really feels like his voice, his view, his opinion. So even though he interviews a lot of people, it doesn't really feel, I don't know, it doesn't really feel fair. I do agree with the message, though, because, I mean, why do Americans kill each other? Like, why about do we have so much gun violence?
I agree with almost everything that he tries to put across, maybe 75% of what he says. But the way he does it isn't like almost like a defeatist attitude. Mm-hmm. What you were trying to say.
Yeah.
Like almost like somebody, like I've been hurt and come save me or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds mean, but that really is how he portrays himself. And it's just, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Also, in a way, it's funny because he's like a finalist, but at the same time, courageous, because he does do these outrageous mm-hmm. stunts.
Yeah, I mean, I do give him credit for that. Like, he goes out there and he does some pretty bold stuff. And, you know, like I said, like, I think he's aimed in the right direction. I just don't necessarily like how he does it. It was a good documentary. The Marilyn Manson interview, which is famous by now, I thought that part was really good. The interview with the guy who was involved with the Oklahoma City bombing was really interesting. That guy was a nut job. Oh my God. Crazy person. But yeah, I don't know, man. And it's kind of funny watching it and knowing that that came out 19 years ago and like nothing's really changed. Schools are still getting shot up. Although it feels like we did have a break for a little while.
I feel like COVID shut things down. I guess.
Things down.
Like, there's less mass murders now that COVID's happening.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we haven't had one in the last 6 months or anything too crazy, but knock on wood, right? I mean, It's only a matter of time, man.
Well, there was a shooting at a protest, but I think that was more protest oriented than mental health oriented. Dude. Yeah.
I don't know if we're really splitting hairs on that, dude. If people are shooting up a protest or shooting up a school, I mean, it's, I don't know. That's a dark subject. Let's move on to something else here. Class Action Park.
You made me cry.
Class Action Park is another documentary I watched. I didn't even want to watch it. My girlfriend did. And I said, okay, fine. I'll watch it with you. I saw the trailer and I was like, okay, it looks kind of interesting, but I feel like I saw the whole documentary in the trailer. And it's kind of blowing up. It's on HBO right now. It's pretty popular, but it's about the park, the water park that was in New Jersey in the 80s, like early 80s to mid 90s. And it was very dangerous. Yeah, very dangerous, ran by like a bunch of kids, like nobody really in charge, just people doing wild stuff. So that's pretty much the whole story. Like they talk about some of the accidents that happened. They talk about the guy who owned the place. What's that?
There's a movie from the guy from Jackass that's based on this. I think it's called Action Park.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in the video, Johnny Knoxville is talking about the place in an interview with Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, yeah. He made a movie about it.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not surprised. But no, like a documentary like this or something else?
No, like a fucking movie. Like based on it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that one.
I want to find what the name of it is.
Weird.
Yeah. Pretty sure. But anyway.
So, I mean, the whole thing kind of felt like a lot of people reminiscing about something that I have no buy into. Like, they're just like, oh, yeah, man, it was crazy. You know, it was just, it was so much fun, but it was like people were getting messed up. And yeah, man, it was crazy. And I'm like, I'm sure it was, dude. Sounds nuts. And, you know, they don't have a lot of footage of like all the real messed up things that are happening. So there's a lot of like animations done for certain parts. And then when they do show footage of the park, it's all like the promotional footage or, you know, like some home video that doesn't really show anything like that. That so crazy.
Did you watch Tread?
No, I didn't watch Tread.
Yeah. Oh, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd give, like, I don't know.
I'm not saying it's fucking the greatest thing ever. I'm saying I need you to see if you could distinguish between a CGI tank and a real tank.
I'm sure I could. I do have an eye for that stuff. But anyway. I feel like Class Action Park could have been 45 minutes long. It really felt like they were stretching it out. I mean, it was kind of interesting. I mean, check it out if you're super interested in that. It seems like it's doing pretty well, but I don't know. This is like not in my ballpark, although I did go to a lot of water parks when I was a kid. Did you ever go to any of those?
Yeah, man. I swam around that pee pool just like you did.
We had Raging Waters, which was pretty close to here. And then there was Waterloo and San Dimas. I've been to that one. Those were a lot of fun, man. I remember having a really good time. And you know what? Like they talk about how rambunctious and out of control people were here and how like they would purposely just do crazy stuff. And I probably would have killed myself at this park if I had gone when I was a kid, because I remember even at Raging Waters, just like trying to like hit banks and go flying in inner tubes and just like doing whatever I could just to like catch as much air or like, you know, you're a little kid. I remember even in Raging Waters, I got someone who worked there, like I got busted, me and my buddy, for doing that, like screwing around in one of the rides. And so like they put us on a bench. We had to sit there until the park closed. It was already about to close, but still like, yeah.
You're a kid, dude. You're a bad person, really. You know, it's funny about going down water slides. If your skin happens to touch a dry spot, that part, the piece of your body is going to try its hardest to stay in the tube while you fucking go down and hit the water. You know what I mean? Like you hit a dry spot and it'll just pull your whatever body part touched that dry spot. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing you and you're saying you never hit a dry spot, Bobby.
A dry spot? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's not good, dude. It's really not good.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good.
Yeah. Maybe yours had better irrigation than mine did, because Yeah, you'd hit a dry spot and it would just, it's bad. Dislocated arms, shit like that.
Yeah. Do they even have water parks anymore? Is that still a thing?
Yeah, there's one in Chula Vista, a big one.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah. You could go. You could go and have fun.
That might be fun, man. I remember having a blast at those things when I was a kid. Although, I don't know if I want to risk the sunburn, man, because it's not worth it. Nothing is worth the sunburn.
You know what is worth it? Critical Role, Bobby. Critical Role is a podcast I've talked about a few times. Talking about this podcast, or like during the podcast, I've talked about this podcast. I have a clip queued up here to show how awesome their little fucking models are, man. So basically, it is a bunch of voice actors that get together and they play D&D. Matthew Mercer is the DM, and he is, all these people are from video games that we've all played. They're all famous voice actors. So Matthew Mercer is like McCree. He does a lot of things for Blizzard, actually. He's a few people in HOTS. If you look him up individually, there's like a webpage I found pretty easily that shows everybody's credits. And so it makes their D&D session so much better because they add weight and value to the characters because they're acting as opposed to just having a good time. There's a little bit of performance there. So every once in a while, there'll be an interaction between two characters, and it's heavy. Like, not very often, maybe every three episodes. But they'll have these like, really interesting interactions between each other, between adventures, right? And then the adventures are incredible because Matthew Mercer is really good at setting the stage, making sound effects, and playing a million different sound characters while he's the DM. You know, he has a different voice for every single person that they run into, and so it's D&D at its pinnacle, maybe, at least for viewing. And then I listen to it as a podcast, and I think I lose a lot of that because they have incredible set pieces. I don't mm-hmm. know if you can see that bottom
left. Yeah, in the bottom left. Yeah, yeah, they've got little figurines, and they've got like this very elaborate cave. It's like a diorama.
Yeah, the diorama is completely... You could break that thing down and form it into any form that you want. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so that part of it is pretty incredible too. But as a podcast, I think it's really good. I've been listening. Every episode is like 3 to 4 hours, which chews up a good chunk of time. But
it's a long podcast. Is that like one session then?
That's one session, yeah. Mm-hmm. Then they have an hour session afterwards talking about what just happened on that podcast. It's kind of like a Talking Dead, I believe. Like after The Walking Dead, there was a Talking Dead.
Yeah.
They do Vox Machina and Tox Machina, where they talk about what just happened that episode. So in depth, and they break down numbers and stuff. I don't listen to that part. I just go to the D&D part. But I find it incredibly entertaining, especially once you learn the rules and stuff. And just the voice acting, man, is top notch. I mean, these people are paid otherwise. They probably make more money here now because it's such a big thing. They probably make more here now than they do on their video game and movie things. A few people came from Alchemist, Full Metal Alchemist. A few people, you know, different things. But yeah, the production value is super high. I think this is probably something that's really intended to be watched on YouTube and not listened to. But I do my best and try to paint a picture inside my head. But mostly it's for YouTube, I think. But I'm a big fan.
Yeah, they seem to be pretty popular.
Oh, yeah. Dude, they make millions of dollars, dude.
Wow.
off of just this.
Yeah.
So, pretty cool.
All right. What else are we going to talk about here?
Just want to say that Marvel's Avengers came out. And I was kind of like always fighting for this game. I really wanted to do really well. People shat on it because it didn't have the known actors playing mm-hmm. as the Marvel Avengers, like this new guy playing Iron Man, new guy playing. But it's for a video game, you know. They had a limited budget, and people talked crazy shit because they're so, you know, how the internet is. So I was kind of rooting for these people. Right now it's a 75% on Steam, 71 on Metacritic. And I really feel like none of that shit would have mattered if you would have made an incredible game. But you didn't make it an incredible game. You made it okay, like a better than average game. And so it's hard to make me look at it for a $60 price tag. You know what I mean? I wouldn't need it.
That is expensive. Why didn't they make it in the likeness of the actors? Could they not get the... I can't remember. I feel like I knew it when the story broke, but I can't remember now. Were they not able to get it, or was it just a creative choice?
I got to imagine it had to be money. Like, even on the creative, you would go with the likenesses if you could. I don't think that Marvel owns the likenesses of those actors, so I think that's what it was.
Well, it's kind of funny how we just identify those fictional characters as the actors now. You know, I'm sure they look different in the comic books. And it's a little more strange when you start getting into characters like Spider-Man, who have been played by so many different actors. Then you start, you know, when I say Spider-Man, who pops in your mind? Which actor playing him?
Yeah, the newest one.
I forget his name. Garfield? Andrew Garfield? Is that right?
The newest one.
I don't know, man. I haven't seen a Spider-Man movie in a while.
Tom Holland. You're doing yourself a disservice, Bobby. God damn it. They're so good. They're the best Spider-Man movies made.
Well, I saw the Into the Spider-Verse. That one was great. But the last time I saw a live-action Spider-Man... I was expecting to see Paul Giamatti, and then he shows up for like 5 seconds at the end, and that was lame. But dude, I still think of Tobey Maguire, man. Like if I hear Spider-Man, that's Spider-Man to me.
Just go watch the Tom Holland ones, man. They're fucking great, especially the first one. First one's incredible.
Yeah, but, I don't.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe if I got a slow day, maybe I'll pull that one out. But not in any rush here.
I cannot hold my bladder, Bobby. I can't talk about Vlambeer Games. I'll be right back.
Okay. Vlambeer Games, they're shutting down. So Vlambeer Studios was kind of an indie game studio. They made Nuclear Throne. They made a few other games. Not any that I was too familiar with. Lufthrausers, I'm not sure how you pronounce that one. That was another one I was kind of familiar with. But they're shutting down after 10 years. And, God, judging by what I read from a lot of people on Twitter, it seems like a lot of people were pretty upset about this. But I think it's not they weren't acting like it was a bad thing. They were like, you know what? The time is right. We're moving on to something else. It's a good thing. So I don't know what that means. If they're starting a new studio, if they're each going their separate ways, but either way, it sounds good. I mean, I don't know too much about the business, so I can't really speak to this, but I don't think it's like an automatically bad thing if a studio closes down. It just seems like kind of a natural cycle. Have you played? You've played Nuclear Throne, right?
Yeah, man. As you know, that's my jam, right? Twin stick shooter roguelikes.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked about a million of them on this podcast. For some reason, that one never stuck. I tried. I would say that I've played about 3 hours of that game, and for a roguelike, that's a lot. Because you've already seen, every time you play a roguelike, you've already played the first your face play first playthrough, you've already seen a good portion of the game, and the co-op seemed weird. The graphics were never great. The sound was off. I don't know why that game blew up. It was not for me. And everybody that I played it with didn't get it either.
Excuse me. It does have overwhelmingly positive reviews on Steam.
I know, dude. I do.
For recent and all reviews, that's pretty crazy. Oh, I'm sorry. That's loud. Oh. But, yeah, I don't know, man. Just didn't connect with you, apparently. But that was their most popular game, right?
Yeah.
That was their big one. I'm going to pull up the other one that I'm familiar with, Luftrausers. I never know how to pronounce that one. I always thought this game looked cool, and I always wanted to pick it up. And I never did. I always meant to buy it when it was on sale for like $250. It reminded me, the graphics of the game reminded me of these really old Atari games like Combat, very pixelated planes and tanks.
Yeah. It looks like Dig Dug. I would say that's exactly what the graphics look like.
Luft. Yeah, it's probably Luft. Luftrausers. Sounds German. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what else I got here? I talked a little bit about Cobra Kai, but I want to talk a little bit more because, so originally, I believe this is YouTube's first scripted show, like actually like actors and sets and, you know, like a show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it did okay for them. Definitely people watched the first season.
Yeah, they were trying to launch YouTube Red, I think, and this was like their big show that was going to get everybody to sign up for that.
It was a little bit later, but yeah, because YouTube Red, they had like a PewDiePie show and like some weird, they were mostly like reality based. This wasn't on it. But then a few months later, they did come out with this. And I feel like it did well because a lot of people... you know, that I talked to, they all liked it and stuff. And I watched it and I thought it was pretty good. And then now that Netflix bought it for wherever, whatever amount of money, it's number one on Netflix right now. And because season two came out.
Mm-hmm.
And is this one of these weird things where I cannot put a finger on it? I'm not like, I would tell you that I'm not dying to go back for every episode. It's kind of just good enough to keep me going. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seemed like the reaction a lot of people had towards it. It didn't, I don't understand why it's all of a sudden it's on Netflix and now it's blowing up. I guess because it just wasn't accessible before. Like it was only on YouTube Red.
Yeah. And I would also say that it's a nostalgia factor. It's really hitting for the 80s.
Yeah.
Like it's a lot of it is just a homage to the 80s. And I think that's what's resonating with people. But also the way that it's shot, the comedy and the overall theme is also 80s. And so it's not only is it hitting nostalgic values in the music, the look sometimes, because it's a modern show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really do believe it's shot in an 80s way and the comedy is presented in an 80s way, like a very ba-dum-ching kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's resonating with people.
Check it out. Love 80s.
On Netflix. Also, Last of Waifus. I have to bring this up. There's no way I could have passed this up.
God, what is this?
It's a $2 game where you play as a pretty good-looking anime character that kills zombies, and it is not fit. Like, there's not a whole lot to it. I believe I saw one weapon in the trailer, and the mechanics were terrible. And somehow has a very positive score of 92%. So there's a lot of weebs out there.
Well, 88 reviews.
Yeah, for sure.
This looks terrible.
It looks terrible, dude. It looks absolutely terrible. But
it's $1.99.
Well, it's the last of waifus, which doesn't make much sense in itself. The game doesn't make much sense, but it's a thing, and people are spending money on it. And good for you guys. Go. I don't know how you would jack off to the same character you're playing as, but have fun, I guess.
$2 and for me.
So, guys, I know that the podcast has suffered. I have been so busy, and it's not going to end soon, maybe November, they're saying. But we're wrapping up this gigantic job, and I'm officially out of debt, which is, I was pretty excited. I paid off the last credit card that I had a like outstanding balance on last week. And not to say that I'm going to start working less now. Now I have to start saving for a house. But that's a pretty big milestone, man, to be out of debt. I mean, I still owe on my truck, but other than that.
Yeah, no, that's not bad, dude. That's awesome.
Yeah, I was pretty happy about it.
Yeah,
so you all have to suffer so that I could be happy.
Yep, now you got to stay out of debt. That's the trick.
I don't spend much money, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, the older I get, the less I spend.
Oh, I've been noticing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I already did enough spending in my younger days. Well, we only have one listener question, and we already kind of answered it. It was from Morconius. He says, do you have a favorite Flambeer game? Flambeer being the studio that just closed. Obviously not Nuclear Throne for you.
Yes, definitely not Nuclear Throne. You know what? Good riddance.
Here's an even worse answer. I don't think I've played any of their games. Nuclear Throne didn't look like my type of game. And, you know, I wanted to check out Lufthrausers, but I don't know if that'll really ever happen at this point now. Although maybe. I don't have that game, which is crazy. Like, I never picked it up in a bundle. It was on sale a few times for like $2.50, and I meant to pick it up, but I never got that game. It was back when I was spending lots of money on games. And I was trying to grab it when it was on sale, but it hardly ever was.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't name another one. So, yeah, good riddance. I think all their games were bad. And so I don't care very much.
Wow. All right. Wow. What are you playing next week? Playing or watching?
If I only knew, dude. I would say I want to finish Mortal Kombat still. And besides that, yeah, I want to play Mortal Kombat next week for sure.
Didn't you already beat it?
I beat the original game. I have not beat the DLC, and I also want to get some practice in and actually try to get good at it.
Yeah, going pro. I'm looking
forward to learning something. Not going pro.
That's how it starts. Well, I'm going to keep playing The Legend of Zelda, but, you know, probably not something I'll share next week. Dwarfheim had another update, and it's pretty easy to get in the beta. I know Minnie hit me up about playing that with him, and he was looking for someone to play with. I do want to go back and check that out. I know they've been adding a lot to it, and they're approaching their release, so maybe I'll do that this week. But otherwise, I don't know. I'll sift through my library, and I'll find something.
I was trying to test my mic today, so I was looking for people actually playing video games when I was trying to test, and it was Minnie playing Factorio, and I feel like that game would really work for you, man. I know that you've said that you're kind of scared of it because you spend too much time on it.
Yeah, maybe. I'll check it out. I don't know, because
you own it
in Dwarfheim. Do I? I don't know if I do. I want to say no, but I might. But in Dwarfheim, like, the fun the fun job is definitely down in the mines, and that's basically playing Factorio. So I don't know, maybe I should just cut to the chase and play Factorio. Another game like that that's really been popular is Satisfactory.
I think that was just for people. I think it was did well because a lot of people that were playing Factorio that already used up all the content jumped over to that. I feel like that's what it was. Spillover.
It was newer. God, it's got some really good reviews. 96%.
Oh, then never mind. It's a good game and it stands on its own.
Yeah, let's take a look at Factorio. Now $30, so they're both the same price. Ooh, 98%. Okay, I don't know. I guess I got to go with Factorio.
Podcast and you're still interested in more of us, go to dlgaming.net. Right there you can see everything that we do, our Patreon, our social media, all that stuff. You can check it out right there. And speaking for Bobby and myself, soda pop titties, everyone. Bye.
Oh, I need more aloe.
Yeah, dude. I didn't see it at first, but I'm comparing your face to your arms. You're a fucking wreck, dude. You're going to be peeling your skin in front of your students. It's going to be like a snake show.